Today again, we're doing another true crime episode, Wacky Wild Wonderful World of True Crime with Matthew Brockmeyer. He is of course the Murder Coaster podcast. You got to check him out. He goes through all the most grisly, heinous crimes and takes you from the beginning to the end. How you doing today, Matthew?
I'm doing all right, thank you very much.
You know, it's really good to have you because we always delve in some of the darkest, most deep, ugly kind of things that humanity is capable of. But today we're going to talk about some of my favorites, which is the Manson family. And if people don't know what happened there, you know, a group of hippies, you know, started murdering people. You know, lots of LSD was floating around. Petty criminals turn into sadistic kind of cultish murdering, you know, people. He had a group of young girls that he called Charlie's Angels, or I guess we call them Charlie's Angels. The family had different names. They got together and killed a few people, but they killed namely famous Roman Polanski's wife at the time, who was pregnant, went to the house, did a whole massacre there. So can you tell me a little bit about the murders first, and then we'll get into who she was?
Well, Leslie Van Houten wasn't there that night. She had nothing to do with Sharon Tate's murder. She wasn't there.
Okay, good to know. So what about her involvement with, because obviously she went to jail. So what did she go to jail for, and what was her involvement with the group? And kind of explain a bit about the group for people that don't
know. All right, well, she was there the second night of the LaBianca murders. And what had happened was they pulled up in front of the house, and Charlie went into the house and tied them up and then came out and said, you know, because he thought that the night before with the Tate murders that it had been too crazy and out of control. And he was like, don't get them scared. Don't have them freaking out. Just kill them and then make a scene. So her, Tex Watson and Patricia Krenwinkle went into the house. They untied her. And then Leslie and Patricia brought her into the back bedroom, and Leslie held her down while Patricia stabbed her. And then, well, what happened was actually they brought her into the other bedroom, and then Tex Watson started killing Lino LaBianca, and Rosemary LaBianca heard the screams and leapt up and said, "What are you doing to my husband? What are you doing to my husband?" At which point Patricia Krenwinkle began to stab her, and then Tex Watson ran in from the other room and he stabbed her. And evidently, Leslie was just standing there kind of watching. She may have been helping hold her down. But after she was dead, Tex and Patricia demanded that Leslie stab her as well. I think they just wanted her implicated in the crime, it seems like, and make it a more of a group thing. And after some coaxing, she stabbed her in the buttocks with the knife. And then they told her to do it again and again. And she ended up stabbing her 18 times in the buttocks. She said that the more she stabbed, the better it felt. And much later, she would write poems about it. But so, most likely she was already dead. She was dead.
Sure, sure. So, but what, out of the viciousness and kind of insanity of all the people involved in Charlie Manson's Manson family, who was the most degenerative, kind of psychotic?
In my opinion, it would be Susan Atkins, a.k.a. Sadie Mae Gulch, or Glutz. She had a long track record. She had been arrested for armed robbery. She had pointed a gun at a cop once and squeezed the trigger, but the gun hadn't gone off. This is all before she even met Charlie Manson. She had been a part of the Church of Satan. She had, which is not wrong, nothing wrong with that. And she'd also been a stripper. Nothing wrong with that either. But she did have a wild past, and she was known to be just kind of like a troublemaker and one who was always trying to like cause a scene and get a lot of attention. And she was like bossy and things like that. And she's also the one who ratted them all out. Like when she was in jail, she confessed to her cellmate about everything, even making up things, even saying that she was there the second night when she wasn't there the second night, but she was telling people that she was there the second night and she was involved in that murder too, which she wasn't. And if she'd kept her mouth shut, there is a chance that none of them would have ever even gotten caught. I mean, a chance, you never.
So how did they get caught? She narked on them.
Well, they got, it's complicated, but they had gone out to the desert and they were living in Death Valley. And they were living out there as like these just insane anarchist marauders. And they had these dune buggies and they were like stashing gasoline and foodstuffs about the desert. And they had strung phone lines out and they were on these deserted ranches and hanging out with these weird miners and stuff. And they came across this earth moving equipment, like a big earth loader, you know, and Charlie thought it was a bad thing because it was digging holes in the earth. It was destroying Mother Earth. And so they set the thing on fire, which the park rangers were pissed. I mean, really pissed. It was like a $30,000 in 1969 money, which is a lot of money today.
Yeah.
And they wanted to know who set their shit on fire. And so they started searching the desert like crazy. They had the CHP, they had fish and game, they had airplanes, and they eventually tracked them down. But it was they got tracked down for destroying this earth moving equipment.
Wow, interesting. So they did, and how does this happen often in crim? I know we talked last week about a money forager who ended up getting caught. He was doing these two different crimes. He was a serial killer, but he was also a money forger. Do a lot of these guys, do a lot of these guys have these dual kind of, I'm a criminal of everything I can get my hands on?
Well, I think it's hard to stereotype people and pigeonhole them. They're all very different. You know, you got to remember that Charlie Manson and the Manson family weren't serial killers at all. They were, it was a cult, you know, he wasn't like Ted Bundy or something like this, a sadistic, sexual, psychopathic serial killer. It was more of a murderous cult situation. But yeah, if you have a sociopath or a psychopathic personality, you'll do all kinds of crimes. For instance, Ted Bundy was a kleptomaniac. The Son of Sam was a pyromaniac. He sent tons of fires. A lot of these guys, the Golden State Killer, Joseph D'Angelo, I mean, he was like a thief. He would break into houses, and a rapist. You know, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, he was a burglar. He would break into people's houses. That, and he was doing that before he started killing. Hmm. And it was his killing was an extension of that, because he would break into the houses to burglarize them and then started getting his jollies by killing people.
Wow. Wow. So Leslie Van Houten was part of the Manson family. She just got out of prison. How long did she do, and what was the terms of her coming out? Do you know?
She was in prison for 53 years. It was interesting. You know, she was it was her, Charlie, and Patricia Kremwinkle, and Susan Atkins were all tried at the same time. And then in 1977, her conviction was, her trial was deemed bad, and she was given a new trial. And in that new trial, there was a hung jury. And then she was actually released from prison. And as another trial pended, and she was out on bail waiting for a new trial, her third trial for the murders. And during that time, she got a job as a secretary. She was just living a kind of normal life. She actually went to the Oscars, which is wild. Apparently, no one at the Oscars knew who she actually was. But she was there at the Oscars in 1978, I believe it was. It's a trip, huh?
That's wild.
And then in her next, I know, right? And she's like, it must have been, I mean, to taste freedom like that. You know, she had been in prison nearly 10 years, 9 years, and now she's out. She's waiting her third trial. She's living, you know, she's got a job. She's got an apartment. And then in her third trial, she was found guilty of murder and conspiracy. And, sentenced to 7 years to life. And I mean, she had 7 years to life, so she was going to get parole. And she went up for parole, I think, at 30. And they said, you're doing good. We think that you're reforming yourself. But we would feel better releasing a 40-year-old Leslie Van Houten to society than a 30-year-old. That's an actual quote from the parole. And then by the time she had turned 40, she had, like many prisoners, you know, found a romance through a pen pal and had married this man. And this is kind of wild. The guy was found forging checks. And when he was searched, he had a women's prison uniform on him. this is the guy she married, you know? And so they didn't like that at all. And that ended up getting brought up again and again at all her parole hearings.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, she didn't get out until she was in her 70s.
So you're saying there was these implications that he was going to plan to break her out of prison.
I mean, he's got a woman's prison uniform. Take what you want from that. I don't know. I can only speculate, but it doesn't sound good, does it?
Yeah. But was she the most benign of all the Manson family?
No, I wouldn't say that, because she did go along the second night. There was a lot of the Manson girls who didn't know that anything was even going on.
Really?
Some of them, yeah, some of them actually thought, because they were trying to blame it on the Black Panthers. And they would, that's why they wrote in blood. Like the original guy they killed, Gary Hinman, they put paw prints and wrote political piggy. And they assumed that everyone knew that a paw print was a symbol for the Black Panthers, but they were wrong. The cops had no idea. The cops just thought it was a drug deal gone bad, which it basically was. And so try as they might to pin it on the Black Panthers, it never worked. But they would tell anybody who would listen that, oh, these murders were committed by the Black Panthers. So there was like Kitty Lutsinger, who was Bobby Boussier's pregnant girlfriend. She truly thought that the Black Panthers had committed all the murders. She didn't know. Well, wow. She knew that she did not the Gary Hinman. It's complicated, but, you know, and then, I mean, Squeaky Fromm, she's a very famous Manson member. Her basic job was just to take care of George Spahn. And from all accounts, she was not a violent person at all. She's very sweet. She cared for this elderly man, you know.
So how did all these kids not, some of them were implicated in all this cultish murders and whatnot, that some of them weren't even active, still come under a lot of trouble, especially Charlie himself, who wasn't at any of them. Is that right?
Well, he had tied up the LaBiancas. He had gone there and tied them up. He had broke into the house, tied them up, and then said they're in there tied up. So, I mean, he went and tied them up. And he claims that after Gary Hinman was killed, Bobby Boussier was arrested for that murder. And Bobby Boussier was a big part of the family. And by the way, Bobby Boussier was also Leslie's, like, the love of her life. And when she was part of the family, Charlie would even say that Leslie's Bobby's girl. Leslie's Bobby's girl. And so Bobby Boussier was arrested for the murder of Gary Hinman, and he was in jail. And Charlie claims that the girls came to him and said, look, we're going to do these copycat murders. We'll do other murders. And these murders will also start Helter Skelter, which was, they thought was going to be a race war. And so it was like twofold. They're like, we can get Bobby out of prison because the cops will realize that he didn't do it when these other murders happen, because he's in jail and he'll get released. And it will also kickstart the apocalypse, basically.
Wow. And so, and you know, famously, the guy that prosecuted this case wrote a book called
Bugliosi.
Called Helter Skelter, which he connected all these Beatles songs to what Charlie Manson's ultimate plan was, which I think that it was a little bad connections that he's drawing. He's jumping to conclusions about stuff that maybe that it sounds a little made up. Do you think that there's any truth in what Bugliosi wrote in his books, or that when did the term Helter Skelter first come around?
Well, obviously the term Helter Skelter came around when the White Album was released, because it's a song off the White Album. But there are problems with the book Helter Skelter by Bugliosi. If anyone's really interested, check out the newest episodes on my podcast, Murder Coaster. We do two episodes. Each of them is an hour and a half long on Leslie Van Houten. So we have 3 hours of Leslie Van Houten's life from the time she was born through her childhood, high school, all the way up till now. We get very deep. So I have listened to police interviews as well as a recorded interview she did with her lawyer. And yeah, it does appear that she completely believed that the Beatles were prophets and that they were modern day saints or like biblical characters from the Bible that were prophesied in the book of Revelations. In the book of Revelations, it said a locust will come. Now, a locust, a bug, a beetle. It's the beetle. The locusts come. And these locusts will have the hair of women. The beetles had long hair. They'll have the faces of men. The beetles had some cute man faces. And they will have plates of armor, fire, that protect them. And these plates of armor, electric guitars. And she, I mean, I listened to this interview, and in the podcast, we actually have a little fun. We reenact the interview, my co-host and I, which is fun. She seems to truly have believed it all.
Wow. That's so crazy.
Yeah. But I do think Bugliosi did twist the truth a little bit to, you know, like there's other books like the slightly newer book Chaos. I think it came out about 4 years ago, which debunks a lot of Bugliosi's theories. It's all about the CIA and stuff. It's very interesting.
Yeah,
highly recommend that if you're interested in the Manson family.
Yeah, can you talk actually a little bit about this new twist? It came from this book Chaos. What's this new twist on this old story?
The new twist is that Charlie Manson's parole officer had connections to the CIA's MK Ultra program, and that he was most likely probably maybe supplying them with LSD that was coming from the CIA, because you have to wonder where they were getting all this acid sometimes, you know, because they weren't particularly liked in the hippie community. Like famously, Wavy Gravy kicked them off the hog farm and didn't like them. You know, they were kind of troublemakers. So, and also the big question that I've had before that book even came out is, why was Charlie Manson given so much leeway? Why was he allowed to do the things he did? He's been in jail over half his life. Now he's out on parole. He's busted for weed. He's busted for having sex with underage girls over and over. The family themselves are busted with him for public nudity, which is a ridiculous charge because the girl, I think it was Mary Bruner, was breastfeeding. Is ridiculous to arrest somebody from breastfeeding, but still they were arrested. They were arrested for stolen cars. They were arrested for stolen credit cards. Why does he keep getting out of jail? Why is he allowed to be in Southern California when his parole officer is in San Francisco and he's supposed to be in San Francisco? Why was he allowed to leave the country and go to Mexico? They actually left the state as well. He should have been back in jail for any of those infractions, any of them. He was also consorting with known felons, and that was part of his parole, was that you're not allowed to consort with felons. So why was he constantly given this leeway, you know? And it seems to be that he was being studied, and the family was absolutely 100% being studied by... Oh, God. They actually wrote a paper called The Group Marriage about the Manson family. And all these people that were doing this studying have ties back to the CIA and to their MK Ultra program. And the reason the book is entitled Chaos is because there was another program besides MK Ultra called Chaos. And Chaos, like COINTELPRO, was trying to infiltrate the hippies and discredit them. Like, you know how COINTELPRO did that with the Black Panthers. They infiltrated the Black Panthers, and they started internal arguments to try to break the group apart. And Chaos was trying to do that with hippies. But the thing with the Chaos is they were smart enough to shred all their files and burn all their shit. And there's very, very little paperwork, very little left to ascertain from what exactly this program did.
You can definitely assume that it was in the best interest of the intelligence communities at that time to get a hold on this new domestic threat, which was the hippies.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know.
Oh, yeah. They thought that's the reason Nixon broke into Watergate. He thought the hippies were being paid by Russia. He thought everybody, because it was the communist threat. They were all thought that they were communist and that they were being paid by Russia. That was a Russian... They all thought that. They were all wrong. They were all dead wrong.
Yeah. No, it turns out
that's what they believe.
There turns out some people are just naturally weird and hairy. That's all.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they're flooding America with LSD.
Yeah.
Flooding it. And like,
what's wrong
and
with
just
these
like
young
making
people?
New hippies. Yeah. And if it wasn't for them and their mind control experiments, it might not have ever happened, you know?
Yeah.
Ken Kesey and all that.
Yeah. for everybody that doesn't know, there's this great historical background of all these people who took LSD and became an entire cultural movement that will be known later as some kind of renaissance for sure. But it was thanks in part to psychedelic drugs. And thank you, CIA, for all your...
You started a revolution.
Right.
By trying to control minds, you open them.
Right. Nice try. So look, we did our 20 minutes. I want to encourage everybody to go out and check out which episode number, murdercoasterpodcast.com, and Murder Coaster Podcast, which episode is the Leslie Van Houten episode where people can hear more?
Oh, dude, it's the last two episodes. I think they're... I think it's 22 and 23, I believe, episode 22 and 23. But you'll find, if you go to murdercoasterpodcast.com, you'll see it's the last two episodes in the episodes section.
Yeah, Murder Coaster Podcast.
And it's very thorough. We get really into it.
Yeah. So before we go, I just want to ask you, who should we do next week?
Oh, geez, I don't know, man. there's so many to choose from, unfortunately. We'll figure it out. And maybe some listeners can throw up somebody if you want us to talk. Who do you want us to talk about?
Yeah, everybody that's still watching, look, in the comments, please let us know which killer would you like us to profile next. As we get better at this, which we will, we're going to make it more interesting and more interactive for everybody listening. So let us know in the comments. Thank you guys for coming. Maddie, anything you want to add before we go?
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
It's always a pleasure to see your smiling face, my friend. We'll see you next week. Okay, everybody? Bye.
Bye.